Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, a podcast about comic books, video games, movies, television, and everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
You're gonna see some serious shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Journey into Comics. I'm your host, Nate, as always, joined by my co-host, Brando. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. And, you know, we have been doing quite a few episodes from our adventures at LaFeeCon. It has been quite the weekend for us. We got to host quite a few panels and turn some of these panels into episodes for you guys, to let you guys, I know a lot of you listeners don't live near our area, but this is what you missed. It was really a lot of cool conversation, a lot of awesome just interaction, and that's what this series of panels was all about. Was just honestly, I felt like we had no idea who each other were, and we sat down and realized we liked all the same stuff.
Yeah, it was really weird because when you hear that there's going to be a guy who works for Marvel or has worked for DC at a con, a lot of times you don't know that you're going to have any commonality with the person. I mean, artists in general are eclectic people, so when we sat down on the stage, and this is, in my opinion, this was my favorite two-part panels of the weekend that we're going to stretch into one massive episode, I think, is how we're doing this. So, to me, the John Tyler Christopher stuff is just, it's different because it felt like he was an extension of the Journey into Comics family. Like, he was just another member of the team coming on to chit-chat about literally anything. He brought up, I mean, you guys will find out, he brings up, like, almost all the major talking points of things that we talk about on a week-to-week basis through our different podcasts.
Like, before we even started the panel, we were just talking about video games that we were playing with each other, or not with each other, but with our family and all that stuff. And we started geeking out about Breath of the Wild, Zelda, that just come out, and that was really cool. And then find out he's really psyched for WrestleMania, which was this weekend, and all that stuff. So, but then we had the awesome honor to talk to him twice, because we had him on the first day, and then he was on the second day, and he invited on Andy Cordy, which you notoriously got his name wrong live on stage.
Yeah, so Andy was talking to somebody when I went to talk on his booth, and I was just like, hey, what's this guy's name, to somebody who was standing there, because I thought they knew him. You know, they were like, it seemed like they had been interacting, and he goes, oh, it's Derek Adams. So I got that name in my head. Derek Adams, Derek Adams, don't forget that, don't screw that up, it's Derek Adams, it's Derek Adams. And I get on stage, and then I say, we have John Tyler Christopher, and we have Derek Adams, and he goes, no, Andy Cordy. And I was like, like, what do I do? It was a complete gaffe on my part, but it actually really spawned great conversation out of that. Like, the whole idea of, like, the unknown indie artist, you know? It was, like, this ironic, funny kind of thing. But we're pretty much just going to take these two panels, back them to back them, and then we're going to hear, you guys are going to hear us on the other side of this, I believe. Right, Brando?
That's exactly right. So sit back and enjoy both conversations with, of course, John Tyler Christopher, and then the second part with Andy Cordy. This is, again, I think it was one of my favorites too, just on a base level of conversation. This is the most of the panels that felt just like a podcast, where we were just sitting back and relaxing. So sit back and enjoy.
Hello, everyone. We're about to do another panel. John Tyler Christopher, correct, with us?
Yes.
He is an artist for both Marvel and DC, and independently art. Right? You love art.
I love anything, man. I'm not, like, the way I describe it, I love DC. I love independent comics. I love things that are not comics. It's just, I haven't had a day off from Marvel in 10 years, so I guess I love Marvel a lot. My wife really loves Marvel from the paychecks.
Oh, I bet. That's awesome.
But
so today, we're going to have you on.
Lightning, come, sit down. Come, friends of Lightning.
Oh, nice call out. I see that now.
I love video games, too.
Oh, you and Brando can have a field
so
day.
So, here's the deal. Here's where I'm going to get a ton of heat. I kind of liked Final Fantasy 13.
You know what? I have the trilogy, and I put, like, 10 hours into it, and then I kind of shelved it, because I've got, like, 817 games in my collection.
Oh, you like video games more than me, then. Yes, okay.
I've got anything from NES to modern.
Nice.
And so it's like, the problem is I never have something not to play.
Okay.
But the real issue is, like, say, like, 15 came out and I liked it,
but it wasn't gripping me. And then I'm like, well, I've got this other game to play. And then Zelda Breath of the Wild came out.
That's what I'm on right now.
I love it.
I just got a horse.
Switch or Wii U?
Switch.
What kind of Switch did you get? Black or with the multicolored Joy-Cons?
I went all gray.
Oh, technically gray, I guess, is the right color.
I did. I should have gotten one extra set of the reds and blues. So, because I play a lot of games with my kids.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Like, my video game time is very limited with my workload. So, I do focus on, like, what can I play with my children. But Breath of the Wild's amazing. Although, honestly, I'm still playing Metal Gear Solid 5.
Really?
Like, yeah. I'm like, perfecting it. So,
gameplay-wise, I thought that game was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the story, no.
Well, yeah, it kind of, like, trails off.
Yeah.
Like, probably about, like, Mission 30. It's kind of when it, like, well, because there's, like, 40. Then after Mission 30, it's like, hey, here's a new one. But this next one is one you did a while ago with the difficulty turn way up. And
yeah, that's,
I liked it, though.
No, just, I've never felt like I was a ninja espionage agent, and that you do in that game. Let's be honest, though, and I hope Kojima doesn't hear this, but, like, we never played Metal Gear for the stories, you know, when they started getting into memes and jeans and all that other stuff. It was just like, when Ocelot started meowing like a cat to summon his soldiers, I was like, this game is awesomely bad, but it's a bad story.
Snake Eater still made me cry, though.
Yes. Oh, dude, the boss.
Yes.
That's all I need to say, man.
I think Snake Eater, to totally tangent away from comics and everything that you normally do.
We're having a video game podcast.
That's
while we,
fine.
I have one.
He does. Game Addicts podcast. You know, with the Metal Gear series, I think 3 did the best job of not only telling a great story, but they had really fun boss battles.
Yes.
I mean, it kind of reinvented the way that you looked at a boss battle. I mean, think about the end. That's like one of the most hardcore bosses because you can never find him unless you cheat.
But what I was going to say, just like Psycho Mantis, there was like these weird little like tricks that once you found out, you're like, wait, I can just change my clock?
Yeah.
And he's dead.
And he's dead of old age.
He died of old age.
Do you guys play video games at all? Yeah?
Quinpool does.
I was going to say, I love it because every show I go to, you see a lot of Deadpools and you see a lot of Harley Quinns. And the fact that you combine the two, I've never seen that before. So you win an award.
He even did the finger. That's hilarious.
Awesome.
He was on earlier with Journey into Comics. So to get down into like brass tacks, you said you love DC, you love independent comics, you work for Marvel, so you're, I guess, contractually obligated to say you love Marvel. But they are kind of opposite pillars, right?
Yeah, well, they are. There are major differences in the comic books, but I think also, like, do you guys watch the Marvel, like, do you guys watch the movies?
Yes.
The TV shows?
No.
Well, yeah.
The Andy Netflix Carter. Series. Is anyone here, like, a huge DC movie fan, TV fan,
okay,
watching
TV,
Flash?
TV, yes.
Okay.
Movies, no. And that was my big argument, is that how are the TV series doing so much better than the movies is way beyond me.
Well, here's my take on it, and I might be wrong, so if I speak out of turn, I apologize, but, like, I look at the DC TV shows acknowledge their source material in the same way that Marvel acknowledges their source material thematically in their films, television, and everything else. DC has gotten everything right except their movies in that, like, look at Bruce Timm, right, and what he did with the animated universe.
Yeah. Correct.
That's Batman. The Arkham series. That's Batman.
Yeah.
When I watch Batman v Superman, I'm like, that's not Batman.
No. Batman doesn't use guns to kill people.
Exactly.
And you would think that, like, with him being such a great detective, wouldn't he have started piecing together the overall plot of, like, the letters trying to, like, rile him up? And
it's like, oh, this is definitely Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
And wait a minute, Clark Kent. Take your glasses off for a second. Oh, I got you figured out, buddy. But that didn't happen.
The best Batman versus Superman I've ever seen was it World's Finest?
Yes.
Bruce Timm cartoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that was like, just film that and put it on the screen. We're good. But I think that Arrow's embraced the inherent cheesiness and silliness of Oliver. the same way that The Flash has, and the same way that, like, the success that Marvel has faced. You guys have seen Captain America, right? You've seen Thor.
Yep.
You've seen Guardians. You've seen the Avengers. What makes those, in my opinion, so successful is that they're each unique universes in the same way that our world is, that when they collide, it creates this inherent drama and tension amongst the characters, that when everything is gray, everything's just, oh, cool, that is good. Whereas, like, here's super spy 40s era World War II hero meeting the Norse god of thunder with flying Viking longboats with laser cannons on them, and this smarmy jerk self-made billionaire in armor, you know, like, when they collide, there's this drama. We don't have to explain why there's drama. We don't have to try and force drama. There's just drama because of who they are. Mm-hmm. And the Marvel films have created that universe. I did a panel once, and we were talking about just the differences in the film. And Kevin Nolan, I don't know if you're familiar with Nolan, his work. He used to do a ton of work for DC back in, like, the 80s and stuff. But he had this brilliant concept where he's like, eventually they're just going to do, like, a Dazzler musical.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I would watch a Dazzler musical.
I probably would, too.
And when Dazzler sings, if they could, assuming get the rights, we're not going to deal with any of the Fox drama, but if they had the rights for a Dazzler musical and she comes singing in and Tony's standing there, that would be epic. Like, I would, they have my money on that.
See, and I've always thought that with the difference, you were talking about Marvel and DC. I just want to mention, DC did something I didn't think possible. They made Vibe like a cool character. I mean, they take obscure characters that people, typically speaking, wouldn't care about.
Right.
And they elevate them.
Yes.
And that's just the TV verse of DC. In the movie verse, it's like they almost go, eh, okay, just like 50% Batman, 20% Superman, and we have a Justice League.
Right.
But why do I care that they have a Justice League when they didn't build the tension for the meeting to be so epic? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I think, like, I loved Batman Begins might be one of my favorite films. The Dark Knight blew my flipping mind.
Totally okay. Agree. That's like my
I think we're all
favorite.
In agreement on that. Yeah.
My whole thing was with Dark Knight Returns, that movie should have ended with Superman flying up above in the sky. Because what that could have done is you've been programmed with the Batman Begins trilogy of, like, it's real. It's real. It's real. Oh my God, a man can fly. And you would have been like, it would have looked awkward.
Yeah.
It would have stood out, and it wouldn't have felt right. But that's the point, because he's Superman.
Exactly.
He's not, he doesn't work in a real world. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh my, he's almost a god among us. Gee, what's the theory they're trying to hammer home in Batman v Superman?
That he's a god among us. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work the way they did it.
Do I need to drop my mic? Because I will.
You could. That was soft on the couch, even.
Didn't want to pop anybody's ears on that one.
Good call.
No, I have loved what Marvel has done. I have loved the fact that they had the cojones to be like, yeah, we're going to make three different movies and then tie them into the Avengers. And everyone's like, that's not going to work. And then when that was successful, and they're like, well, we have all these other cooler characters. We're going to make a movie about a talking raccoon and a tree that says three words.
Four. Well, five, technically, in that movie.
Well, sorry.
We are Groot.
Yes. But it's just like, how rad is that, man?
It's super rad. Guardians is one of my favorite, like, overall teams in the Marvel-verse.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2, that was Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. I was in the theater to see that 3D. And the trailer for Guardians dropped in 3D and blew my mind. I don't think I shut up about it for like the next 6 months. And then when I saw it, I had to see it again and again and again. And now I have like every kind of Guardians collectible you can probably imagine. I own like a cassette of the mixtape volume one.
Nice.
And a couple different versions of the vinyl.
Not to mention the new Marvel Legends line of Guardians of the Galaxy characters available now at your fine retailers.
Hey, that was a great plug. But I got to ask this honest question. Marvel versus DC, let's get into the books aspect. You've done work for both, right?
I did three covers for Voodoo when they did the New 52. And other than that, like I said, I've never had a day off of Marvel in 10 years. So
wow. Is there any passion project within Marvel and or DC that you haven't been thrown but you're looking for?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, anyone who's into comic books, I don't care what you're a fan of. You love Superman. You love Batman. You love Wonder Woman. She's new, but Harley Quinn is amazing. Like, there's all these characters. Everyone's got their ideas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you want to share some?
No, I'm not going to bore anyone with them because they're probably terrible. But in my mind, they're super badass. I love DC as well. I would argue that I defy you to find a finer series than Darkest Night from like the Lantern Wars when they introduced all the different spectrums all the way to Darkest Night. If you've not read those books, it's amazing. When they get into the Yellow Lanterns and stuff like that, like, again, just film that.
Yeah. I wish they would.
People would, when I heard that Ryan Reynolds, I was like, he could make a good Hal Jordan, and then he didn't, and then...
I think the thing that shocks me about that, I don't know if you know this, even though technically speaking you don't see anything like what he does in that movie, the Green Lantern movie, Greg Berlanti is tied to that movie.
Really?
He wrote the original script. They ruined it, and they made it look awful, but from that happening, from that mistake, DC felt like they owed him one.
Okay.
And guess what they did? They gave him Arrow. Arrow spawns Flash, spawns Legends, Supergirl.
But here's my question about that.
Sure.
Why is Flash on the TV show that everyone has fallen in love with not the Flash in the movie?
Hollywood.
I think that's a perfect.
They don't see
answer.
Him as marketable, maybe. As when you're talking about a big screen, I mean, you're talking about Warner Brothers. They view Batman as their flagship.
Oh, you can, yeah.
And Superman's right here. And of course, they want to put these up there, but then they want these certain faces. They see, well, this kid. And the moment that you start asking the question of, well, why don't you just take, you know.
Well, Will Smith did wonders for Suicide Squad, didn't he? I know. I'm being that guy, Billy. But this is like.
Like, I can't even say no. You know, I saw Suicide Squad, and I hoped to like it, and then I didn't. And I think that the only redeeming quality was Harley Quinn.
Yes.
Kinda.
No, she was cool, man. Like, my thing is, like, you're seeing it now with Star Wars. And this is where, like, Disney has their crap together so well. You're starting to see a it saddens me you're seeing a separation between the Netflix series and the films of Marvel. Because my dream was, I wanted Daredevil to fight alongside Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
That's my... I have a really lame dream in my life, and that is it. But you look at what they're doing with Star Wars, and Star Wars is picking up the place where those two have dropped the ball. Marvel's starting to drop the ball. DC refuses to even pick the ball up. Like, it was little, but the Ghost was in Rogue One. Chopper was in the background. And have you guys seen Rebels at all? The cartoon?
It's on Disney XD, I think.
It's unreal. Do you guys want to know why Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader? Watch The Clone Wars. You'll get it. Like, it's so good, and all that is canonical.
Yeah.
That's where Disney is, like, they get it. And they're so smart to say, hey, man, let's make this bigger universe. So as you're following along with Rebels, or, I don't know, reading the comics, and there's this character named Dr. Aphra that is, like, exploded in popularity among Star Wars fans. Like, I have no inside track on this. I would be shocked if Dr. Aphra doesn't show up in a film. Or the cartoon or something, because the comics are canonical. Everything is canonical. So, yeah, you don't have to read the comics to enjoy it. You don't have to watch Rebels to enjoy the other stuff. But the more you're invested in those other things, the more you start to pick up these little idiosyncrasies.
Well, was it in Rebels or one of the cartoons they brought in HK-47 from the Knights of the Old Republic video game? That was that character. That was in the Old Republic. So that was in the Old Republic. They brought that character back. Did they do something with him in Rebels? HK? Yeah. I could have swore I saw something because that character has a big, deep underground fan base.
Oh, dude, Meatbags, yeah. Come on, bring it on, bro.
And so, like, when I heard that they're going to do something with that character, I'm like, well, hold on, wait a minute. They're bringing him into more modern stuff. Well, what?
Exactly. Like, it feeds into that fandom. Like, one of the things that Marvel was really successful with, and we kind of talked about it with Rocket and Groot earlier, but, like, everyone wants to have the inside scoop.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, literally, Entertainment Weekly exists because people want the inside scoop. The comic book movies and the Star Wars stuff and what Disney's really learned to capitalize on that's so successful is this idea that you know who Pepper Potts is before going into the movies. You can walk in there and give everyone, like, by the way, she's going to, like, hook up with Tony for a while, but then she's going to marry Happy Hogan and blah, 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 and all this stuff. Like, my mom was like, who does Pepper end up with? I was the inside scoop in these things. Now, does that mean is Gwyneth Paltrow going to end up with Jon Favreau? Probably not now at this juncture. But it doesn't matter because they've already sold us, but we are literally a marketing department for Disney, whether you know it or not, selling people on Yondu's going to be a good guy because he's lying, he's going to, you know, like, and it's really smart. Like, it's really, and it makes it better for us, but the people that have never read a comic book or have seen the cartoons, I'm sitting here, Disney is not paying me to tell you to go see The Clone Wars, and I'm sitting here telling you because it's awesome.
It's on Netflix.
That's smart, yeah.
I'm pretty sure all seasons are on Netflix.
So.
Now, I want to mention, you're talking a lot about Star Wars. This is an amazing picture.
Thank you
very
much.
And I wish we could put it up here. He's holding an original Rancor from 83 Return of the Jedi, and I'm pretty sure that's an original AT-AT, I'm guessing, from Empire.
Both of those were my toys,
and
yes.
And they were your actual toys. That's incredible. So you're a huge mark for Star Wars.
Star Wars is where it all began for me. Like, I was a kid. That Rancor, like, so here's my level of nerddom, and if this affects my sales, so be it. When I was a kid and I watched Thriller for the first time, it scared me. And in my head, I rationalized what's the only thing that can defend against werewolf dancing Michael Jackson was a Rancor. So I slept with my Rancor for like 3 months, and it poked me and it prodded me. But I was never attacked by a dancing werewolf Michael Jackson, so who's the fool?
Not you, apparently.
No, I'm not. Thank you.
That's a win. So you mentioned your journey. I got to know, where does your journey into comics begin? I mean, I guess we are a Journey into Comics podcast. It would be foolish for me not to ask. How does this
that
all start
smooth.
For you?
That was smooth. That was so smooth.
I mean, you know.
That's what we call a segue right there, buddy.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Money.
I'm trying to master those, you know, segues.
Well, as a little whoop whoop, born and raised in Lafayette, Indiana.
Hey.
Yeah.
LafayCon.
No, I was born and raised here. I went the route that a lot of young kids, I think, that want to become artists get into, which is, that's great. What do you want to do to make a living? But I pursued it. I had an opportunity to go out to the Art Institute of Seattle. I went to Purdue. I studied theoretical math and philosophy. I dropped out with a semester to go because I was like, there's no money in that. From there, went out to the Art Institute of Seattle, studied 3D animation, hated it. Became the concept artist at the Art Institute. From there, I got into advertising. From advertising, I started making those. Is anyone here shop at the Home Depot?
Yeah.
Those little square flyers that are like $59.99 drills. This guy right here. So I was making those, drawing that. I learned a ton in my advertising world about, like, how to read market sheets, how to understand sales, how to understand demographics, blah, blah, blah. On the side, started drawing pictures that I wanted to, met a gentleman who was part of a studio with Georges Gianti, Buffy the Vampire Slayer artist, Gambit, other things like that. Dexter Vines, the inker on Civil War, Old Man Logan, one of the most talented people I've ever met. It's weird, he actually inked something of mine and he accidentally spilled ink on it. And I was like, you can't get mad at Michael Jackson for, like, messing up a free throw. So I guess I just had to accept that ink splatter was meant to be there. But
keep it.
Yeah. No, so when I was there, I started doing cons. I was one of the first artists to ever sell $10 prints at shows. I was told it was going to fail miserably because you only make money selling $100 sketches or $50 prints that you sell limited quantities of.
Man, so in a lot of ways, you kind of revolutionized part of the industry. That's such a common practice now.
Well, it is, and that's one of the things I really strive for with younger artists is, like, I'm a professional artist. This is how I make my living. Making money is part of what I do. And that's not a bad word. I mean, Michelangelo didn't paint the Sistine Chapel because his feelings said it would be cool. Like, you know, he got some cattle out of that or something. So part of my background in business and in marketing and in advertising is looking at situations and acknowledging what is new, what are avenues to grow. And it's something, sadly, I think the comic book industry is lacking in. So I would go to these shows, and I was sitting there with my little corner that somebody would, you know, Georges would give me a corner of his booth. And I was like, everyone's walking around, but the only thing that people are selling are $50 at the least. So I started doing these little silly pictures, and I was like, I have a poison ivy for $10. I have a white queen for $10. And I acknowledged that everything also was very garnered towards men. And all these girlfriends that were walking around who were like, I've never read a comic book. And I'm like, I bet you girls would like comics too, maybe. And girls can spend money too, just like boys. So I started making girl-focused artwork to sell to women at $10 price points, to where boyfriends were like, yeah, I'll give you, I got $10 for you, honey. Or, gee, my buddy's, I need to get something for him at the con. I don't want to spend $100 on a sketch by Frank Miller or whatever at the time. I got $10. And so I was actually starting to outsell other artists, big name artists, to those same people that were telling me I was an idiot, were coming over being like, how do you do this? Where are you getting your prints made up? How are you able to sell them at $10?
Did you say Kinko's?
No.
It wasn't Kinko's?
It was not Kinko's. I won't give the plug there. I'm sorry.
Good call.
No, like, I went to my local printers. Like, right now, I live in 9th Street Historical District. Right down the street from my house, there's a company called Inked Spot. The dude prints out of his garage. He's half the price of Kinko's. He's also a male model, so he's super good looking. So, like, my wife gives me the big thumbs up on shopping there. He does better work than you're going to get at a lot of other places. It's cheaper. You know, I got to a point where I was selling so much, I actually was getting print presses. I was actually getting plates made for my prints. And from there, I was literally selling so much that the other thing that people weren't thinking about in doing this is I had walking billboards. Everyone that was carrying my art. So I was out at Emerald City. I was starting to generate enough revenue that even as a side job, I'm like, I'm traveling. This was my job, was going to cons effectively on top of the Home Depot. And some guy, Philip Soblik at Top Cow, was like, I have seen everyone walking around with these art prints. Who did this? And they're like, it's some dude over there. I've never heard of him. He walked over and he's like, do you want to do Witchblade? And I'm like, yeah. So I apologize, this is like a long story, but like...
No, please.
So I did my first Witchblade cover. Now, with a background in advertising and everything, you don't just do a thumbnail. You do a metric ton of thumbnails. You explain why these thumbnails exist, what you think the benefits are of each one, who we think we're going to reach, what the advantages of this one versus this one, how we could combine these, yada, yada, yada. So I wrote this like War and Peace novella along with 100 thumbnails or whatever to Top Cow. Sent it to Philip, and I'm like, here's the idea for my first Witchblade cover. And he's like, I have never seen this with any artist ever. This is fascinating. And as we've started to produce the cover, and I was explaining why I was doing these things, he's like, so I just put a call into comicbookresources.com. Would you be interested in typing all of our conversations out? And they would like to run an article on your process. So I did my first Witchblade cover. They published the article. As I've been told, one of the editors at Marvel was asked to go check out this new Witchblade artist. In the back of that book that the guy worked on was the advertisement with my cover. He Googled my name, saw the article explaining all this, and they're like, oh my God, an artist that actually understands like how to market, how to sell, how to communicate visually, the differences of, you know, we talk about trends, right, with movies, and yeah. Oh, you got to follow. I look at it the same way I play the stock market, right? If I look and every cover is a close-up of somebody's face, or is this like really highly detailed rendered artwork, if everything on the shelf is that, I want to be the super simplistic, plain, it's Rocket Raccoon made of guns. If everything is like super artsy and graphic, I want to be the hyper realistic painting, because that's, it jumps off the page.
Yeah.
Right? Understanding all this stuff, when Marvel saw that, they're like, hey, dude, do you want to do Iron Man? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I do. And I've literally not had a day off in 10 years since that.
Now, I know that I'm pretty sure you did a Superior Iron Man cover. Or a couple, is that right?
I've done, as far as I know, definitely one. I did for, is a, this is a weird story, so segue again.
Sure,
apologize.
Sure, sure. No, 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 don't apologize.
So I did that. That one of the, if it's the one I'm thinking of where it's Tony and he's standing and there's a ton of Iron Man armors behind him.
Yeah, I think so.
That was a store exclusive for, oh my God, the huge comic book store in New York City.
Midtown.
Midtown, thank you. That was an interesting segue. So I did that cover, and I'd done several store exclusives. And I was like, well, why are they doing these store exclusives? To sell, make their, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I called Marvel one day, and I'm like, I started doing, I had this idea of, I want to do a store exclusive for me.
Yeah.
So I put it in my back pocket, and I waited for the opportunity. So I call, I start doing these Star Wars action figure covers. And I do the first four or five, and I say, hey, Marvel, I'd like to buy a store exclusive. And they're like, do you have a comic book store? And I'm like, I can make one. So I went through the paperwork, got incorporated, opened a comic book store in this little corner of my house that no one is allowed to go into except for me, but we happen to sell online. And from there, I'm like, John Tyler Christopher LLC would like to purchase his own limited edition variant store exclusive. And they're like, cool. And they put me in touch with Lucasfilm. I bought the rights to do Boba Fett as my store exclusive. And didn't announce it. We posted, I literally launched my website / store website. It was really funny though, just because I was the first artist to ever do this. Like, there's all these weird red tape idiosyncrasies I had to go through. Like, for example, I had to submit my artwork. Marvel had to email me my own artwork. I had to write down that I approved my artwork. So we have this like running joke now where I actually deny my own artwork and say that like this guy's a hack, he can't do this, blah, 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 or like make the visor more red or some whatever like stupid thing, you know, clients would ever say. You know, the sky is blue, grass is green, and bricks are red joke. So anyways, we did that. I launched the book along with my website. No one knew about it. They were going to run an article in on comicbook.com announcing it. We ended up selling 75% of my stock in the first 8 hours. Like, somebody just discovered it and just, it did what the internet does.
Flippers?
Viral.
Some flippers?
Yeah.
Which is cool. Dude, God bless flippers.
Hey, because they're putting big spotlight on your work.
Make money, man.
Absolutely.
If you can make money off of me, cowabunga, bro. Like, look, the idea that people have against like hating flippers or like, I won't mention any artist names, but if you're familiar with certain artists, you might know who I'm talking about. But like, they choose to do one sketch a show, and they'll do their one sketch a show, and then someone will sell that sketch, and he'll charge you like $200 for the sketch, and then you'll turn around and sell it on eBay for like $3,500. And like, they get upset by that. And he's like, I might not do sketches anymore at shows. And I'm like, either you need to charge more or you just need to be cool. Like, the way I look at it, man, if you buy one of my prints and you take it home and use it as toilet paper, I got my $10. Right?
What, like, you do with it is your own.
It's your piece of art.
Yeah, totally.
I don't care. And With Boba Fett, like, that was the same philosophy. And with the variants that I sell, it's like, if you can flip. But I also made sure, because knowing what people did with what my business model at cons, they were going to follow with my business model on my own exclusive variants, where there was like, at one point, like, there were 12 different artists doing their own variants. Knowing like that oversaturation of the market's going to tank it, right? So I focus less on accommodating to the flippers, even though I'm fine with them, and more about how do we create a long-term sustainable business model by repeat customers, targeting the people that actually enjoy what I do, to where I've been blessed, and I'll knock on wood all day, every time we've done a Star Wars book, I sell out. And even though we're not selling with the book, like the book we did after Boba Fett, I had three people come and say, I will buy every single copy of your book right now before you even sell it. You can sell out to me. And I was like, can't do it, bro. Because if I do that, I'm screwing over all my fans. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, every single time, even though we're selling less quantity per person, we've actually gained new fans that we've sold out. And like, if we got to a point where I sold every copy to the same number of people and we sold one per person, I'm cool with that. Because at the end of the day, they're going to keep coming back. They're happy. And also, it's all, I don't care where that money comes from. Like, I get paid, man.
Right.
Woo!
Now, I think that your art is really awesome. Like, honestly.
Dankeschön.
You have a very cool minimalistic approach.
Oh, thank you.
Personally, I like really love the minimalistic style. Even though you also have really intricate detail within your minimalism. And that's hard to pull off. So, I love that. But, Brandon, did you have anything off the top of your head you were thinking about asking?
It's just so difficult to just come up with a question because it's so natural just to riff.
Yeah.
And just to, like, just talk. Is there anything, like, coming down the pike that you can say that you're currently working on?
I'm not allowed to. I will say you might enjoy something that's coming out soon for certain books.
Okay.
After what you just said.
Okay.
A minute ago.
Wink.
So. Good call. I was just like...
No, you know, it's one of those weird things. It's like, it's always challenging whenever you get the inside scoop on stuff. Like,
yeah.
I did some work on Iron Man 3. Like, I had the cat was out of the bag for me. And you really learn to appreciate things on different levels when you work in the industry. So, you know, like, I can appreciate movies on different levels now. Like, I used to rag on Michael Bay all the time. I don't do that anymore because I know what it takes to make a movie, man. And the guy's actually really good at what he does in certain respects. So it's all cool, man.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to be with art too. It's just like you do what you do, and as long as you're happy doing it, no one should bother you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's just the way it's got to be. Now, I got to know in your journey, like, what comic book kind of changed the game for
X-Men
you?
Number one.
Really?
I'm a child of the 90s, man.
So, like, not Uncanny number one. You're talking the 90s release. Jim Lee's
X-Men number one.
Excellent.
Is the holy grail of comics to me. Like, I have drawn that comic book. So, to my journey into comics, if you will.
Awesome.
I went to McCutcheon. I don't know if anyone here went to McCutcheon. Nancy Geyer, super rad. When I was in school, I wanted to be Jim Lee. Like, that's all I wanted. I wanted to be Jim Lee so bad. One day, I had this, like, weird epiphany. And I'm like, well, if I want to be Jim Lee, who did Jim Lee want to be? And he wanted to be Art Adams.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Art Adams' run on New Mutants, Jim Lee traced some of the New Mutants books from Art Adams in to make X-Men number one. And then I was like, well, cool. Well, if he wants to be Art Adams, who does Art Adams want to be? And you start going down this rabbit hole of, oh my God, my teachers were right. Michelangelo, Da Vinci, like, all of these classic paintings. And you start to uncover, like, the coolness and what was made people like Warhol so rad and fine art. So you retroactively see, like, now when I look at it, it's like, Jim Lee is amazing and is my favorite comic book artist, but my God, has there ever been a painter like Rembrandt? The answer is no. He's unbelievable. And it's like you start to see these trends and how art moves and throughout the ages. It's so cool.
And I think one thing, I was over at your booth earlier, we were talking, and you brought up Coles Phillips, I think?
Coles Phillips.
As inspiration for something you're doing. And you said he was a 1900s artist.
Yeah, if you guys go to my booth, there's these pictures of characters. Like, actually, in your red bag, there's a Champions comic book that I did. The Miss Marvel, right? It's a negative space. So, like, the idea is that I didn't draw her dress. But it's there because the background is blue.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on somebody called Coles Phillips. And, yeah, like, 1903 or something, illustrator. And he did this work with, like, women in dresses with, like, geometric shapes. It's my, like... Google Coles Phillips, You will be happy.
They were like, oh my God, there's a comic book in here? I didn't even know.
Free comic book. What?
Right on, man.
So
then the next question. You said that Jim Lee's your artist. Who's your favorite comic book character, though?
Jenny Sparks.
You got me. Jenny Sparks, huh?
Jenny Sparks. Have you guys not read The Authority?
I don't think so.
Yeah, you need to like change that. We should stop this panel right now and just go find Authority books. It's somewhat dated by today's comparison because it, much like Watchmen, paved the way for the concept of like it's a meta comic. Like, I'll just put it this way: the third arc, they fight Jack Kirby.
Whoa, the artist. That's crazy.
Yeah. The second arc, they fight God. Like, it's weird. It's but it's not God, and it's not Jack Kirby, but it's God and Jack Kirby. And the point is, like, it's a book that, like, there's a Batman guy. There's a Superman guy. Jenny Sparks is, how do they put it? She's the woman of the 20th century. Okay, yeah, there you go. The idea is she is the defender of that millennia.
Well, that's awesome.
Or that century, right? And you just have to. And she is a chain smoking British.
You sold me.
Oh, she's so rad. She's so rad. So, yeah.
Awesome. That you kind of threw me for a loop because I had never heard of that character before, and I was like, Rolodex, who? Sparks, is that a Flash character? No.
That's my hipster cred, yo.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, it was actually kind of mind-blowing to me because your action figure variant covers that you do of Star Wars.
Yeah.
I've seen those for a long time and just thought they were incredible, and then I realized you're the creator of those, right? All of them
yes.
were from your brain.
Yes.
That's awesome. Oh, that's so awesome. They just did that was last year was Star Wars number one when they relaunched?
When they relaunched, yeah, I did not only all the action figure covers, but I also did a negative space one, the things you dig. It's of Leia and Han and Luke as stormtroopers.
Oh, that's with the white okay. as the yeah, negative. That's
as a cool. negative. And I also did the what was called the party variant. It's Jackson. I was the first artist to get to paint and draw Jackson from old school Star Wars.
Oh, that's cool.
Since like 1981 or something like that.
That's incredible.
So that was pretty rad, man. Been trying to do a Jackson action figure, but Lucasfilm is not necessarily a fan of Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, because Lucasfilms didn't give all the rights to all their characters away in that deal with...
Technically, he is a Marvel creation, but George felt he was too stupid and silly, unlike a certain Gungan, who I also wanted to insert with Jackson.
That would be awesome.
And I was told that's a sensitive subject, and since this is for Star Wars number one, let's just be nice and polite.
Avoid.
Yes. Although, here's the deal. With the action figures, and I mentioned like the exclusive variants I do of those, I've done like 8 of those at this point. My dream is to do a Jar Jar action figure on my site, and I will give one to every person that has ever bought from me, and that is it, and it'll be the most rare comic. So Jar Jar will be worth a ton of money, and everyone will want Jar Jar Binks.
Note to self, go buy all of his comics online right now. No, yes.
You will be like, oh my God, he's worth like $1,000. I have to get a Jar Jar Binks, and I will laugh at you, and I will point at you.
He just said Jar Jar is Snoke.
Dude, if that's the case, I'm down.
See, I thought Snoke was a reincarnated Darth Maul, but that's for another podcast.
Oh, hey.
Really? Huh. I didn't know Snoke was original.
And that's, I'm loving. I'm digging the new one.
Yeah.
I am like totally happy with where they're going.
BB-8's the coolest droid.
Yes.
Like arguably the coolest droid. Especially with the flame thumbs.
Yes.
So before we close,
I just have. How nervous were you, day one, Force Awakens? You're sitting in the theater. The nerves, because I mean, okay, so it's been like what at that point, what 10 years since we had the prequels, and now you're like, It's almost like this is happening again. It's almost like you had a really awesome girlfriend, and it ended. It was great, and you guys separated on good terms. But then, like much later, you guys got back, and then you realize this doesn't have the magic that it once had. Yeah. This is not good, and now it's like, here we go again. What am I doing? And then, of course, because I had the same feeling.
Yeah.
And then I enjoyed the crap out of it.
Is this being recorded?
Yes. Sure.
Okay, then I'll have a story for after okay.
Oh, fair
recording.
Enough. Fair enough.
No, it's. I was super nervous, and I was so relieved, and I think that the direction they're going in is absolutely brilliant. Look, man, I have struggled. I don't know if any of you have young children. I've struggled to get my daughters into liking Star Wars. The Clone Wars did a really good job of it, and Rebels is doing good. But my God, we walked out of The Force Awakens, and both my daughters were like, I'm Rey. No, I'm Rey. Daddy, can we go buy lightsabers? And at that moment, I was just like, thank you, Disney. I got to go home. I went and bought a red lightsaber and a blue and a green lightsaber, and I went and had a lightsaber fight with my daughters that night.
That's incredible.
I couldn't sleep. I had to go home and go right to bed so I can go to work in the morning. And I'm laying in bed going, I'm too excited. My brain wouldn't shut off because now you just saw a good Star Wars movie the first time in forever, and now your brain's going, well, what's next? What's here? What's there? Oh,
that movie was so rad that you knew that Rey was going to get that lightsaber, and you still went like, oh, my God, she got the lightsaber yeah. when it happened.
Totally.
That was filmmaking genius right there. So
now, before we close this panel, I think we've only got probably about 15, 10 minutes. I don't know what the time is.
It is. We are at 3:43.
Luckily for our audience, you're back tomorrow. We're doing another panel with you, and we can keep riffing however we want. But before we go, are there any audience questions you would like to ask him before we go?
Anything and everything. Don't be shy.
Somebody has a question.
How about this? If you ask a question, we'll give you a Journey into Comics.
What's a book you haven't worked on that you wish that you did?
That's a great question, and I'll keep it to Marvel just because, again, like DC, love to do Batman. One of the blessings of the action figures has been the opportunity to work on books like, okay, as a variant cover artist, I work on Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Captain America. It's like you do the same character over and over again. With the action figures, I was able and given the opportunity to be like, okay, well, we've done all those guys now. Who do you want to do? I'm like, Squirrel Girl. The new Wolverine, X-23 Wolverine. Kamala Khan. Honest to God, probably the best new character in 20 years. So all those like side characters, but I've really wanted to do an Uncle Ben just because when do you get to draw Uncle Ben, you know? Or
Tombstone? Just the Tombstone?
Oh, yeah. Dude, too soon, bro. Too soon.
Or Stan Lee once broke a fight up between Spider-Man and Batman, right? And he said, stop or I'll call your Oh.
No, any of those, like, I love obscure characters. I am all about, like, Darkhawk and, you know, like, yeah, that would be beyond rad. Again, child of the 90s, like, if my dream job would be to do, and I've considered, I don't care if I even sell a single copy, but doing a store-exclusive variant for my store of every single character from Generation X. Skin, Chamber, Husk, M, that is my favorite comic book ever made. So that would probably be, yeah. Sweet, okay, we got one.
See, you have at least a customer for that.
We got one, all right.
Are there any other questions before we wrap day one? Go ahead, sir.
I just wanted to point out that Warren Ellis is doing like this sort of ultimate version of his own Wildstorm stuff called The Wildstorm, and Benny Sparks is in that.
I have not heard that, and I am going to buy those, though. Are they available now, or?
I believe so. I think we're on
the
third issue.
Oh, my gosh. Did you read, what was it? It was the new Marvel that they redid. I just read it recently. Marvel released it back in the 80s. They did this like new universe. It was called New Universal. Did you read New Universal at all?
I didn't read Ellis's.
And they're married.
Yes.
Awesome. Dude, it was. If nothing else, I give them kudos for their cojones. So before the authority started, they got rid of their old team, Stormwatch. How did they do this? With an Aliens crossover, where a xenomorph killed the entire previous team. That is bold, man.
I feel like I have some issues of Stormwatch, like laying around.
It's cool, man, but yeah. Dude, they all get acid in the face. So
that's
just
even
be forewarned.
Now
so.
I really want to read it, you know? I like crossovers like that. All right, are there any other questions? Go for it.
I had very supporting parents. When I got married, I had a wife that acknowledged and was okay with the fact that it takes an obscene amount of hours to get where you're going. But it's following my dream, right? Like, when I was a kid and I would play on my parents' farm out by Wainwright Middle School, I never wanted to, like, play football. I never wanted to, like, be in a movie. I wanted to draw comic books. That is what I wanted. And there's fuel for whenever anyone tells you you can't do something, but if you have a vision and you have the tenacity to go after it, you can do anything. Whatever you want to do, I'm telling you right now, you have a better chance of doing and following your dreams than anyone in the world has ever had before you, because of the internet, because you can get out there, you can meet people. If you want to be an actress, you can make YouTube videos now as a resume instead of, please, sir, can I have a job to be in your commercial? Like, now with comic book art, like, if you want to be a comic book artist, make your own comic book. You can sell. Here's the brilliance of the internet, man. Like, back in the day, you had to make Marvel happy. Now, if you can find a true fan will give you $100 a year, right? If you can find 1,000 people that are true fans on the planet, that's not many people. Congratulations, you're making a six-figure salary. You're what we call rolling, yo. So with music, with anything you want to do, you can do it, and you don't have to make suits happy. You can make yourself happy, and if you can make 1,000 fans in the world happy, congratulations, you got yourself a career.
That's great advice, excellent, actually, yeah. That was awesome. Any other questions? Anybody else? Couple more, any more, no more? All right. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it. John, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me.
We're
going
to be talking to you again tomorrow so we can riff more about your journey and talk more about whatever we want to talk about.
Cowabunga, dude.
Maybe Ninja Turtles. We could totally riff on Ninja Turtles for several days.
We could. It's also WrestleMania tomorrow.
Yes.
Are you a wrestling mark, too?
Buddy, you don't even know the half of it.
You need to come on our podcast more often.
Yeah, for real.
This is what we talk about.
This is all we talk about.
Can we discuss how much I hate Roman Reigns?
Yes. No. Ad nauseum.
And Baron Corbin.
And Baron Corbin, yes.
He's two. He's kind of grown. His whole shtick as like the I hate ROH wrestlers deal in NXT was amazing.
Go back to the indies.
Baron Corbin actually won an award on our podcast for the first ever Baron Corbin Award.
Oh, well, you don't say.
Yeah.
He was nominated like 5 times.
He was.
He actually didn't win his own award for several years. That's a sign of suckitude I've never heard.
I think Roman's up next year for the Baron Corbin Award, though. So we'll talk about that later. But we're going to go ahead and cut this one now.
I think so, dude.
We're running low on time. We have another panel coming up.
We have another panel coming up at 4 with the Wolfgar Weapons and Costs Awesome panel right up here at 4 o'clock. So definitely don't miss out on that.
But don't forget to go visit John at his booth.
Absolutely.
Back there, all the way at the back. Like, you can see it directly from here. He's got art for sale. And anything else you want
to
add?
No, just thank you guys for listening. Thank you to everybody. And I hope you guys have a righteous rest of the day.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, are you dudes ready? Did you watch NXT last night, by the way?
I did.
Yeah, I watched part of it last night after the after party, and then I watched some of it this morning when I was getting ready to
That
here.
Was me. I finished Rude and Nakamura this morning.
I got like 80% Rude Nakamura, and I didn't get to see the finish.
I got to see Ahsoka. Asuka is like my favorite wrestler
Yeah.
out there right now.
Yeah.
She's a beast. She is Brock Lesnar with a, but actually looks like she cares what she's doing. It's amazing. Oh.
I feel like Brock is stuck living the glory days, you know? Like in his prime in 2003, and he's just like, I can do it again. They like me. They really like me.
I don't think he gives a crap if people like him or it's not.
He's doing the Shooting Star Press on Goldberg at WrestleMania.
Really?
No, he's not. But okay. That, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he tried, you know? He's like, what, 42 now or something?
I love that he's gotten to this point where it's just like, I'm just going to do some suplexes. I mean, the guy is like, I mean, you watch his old stuff. I mean, he and Angle, that whole series, the Iron Man, oh my God, how good was that? But, like, I just watch him now, like, when he fought Cena and did the, what was it, 13 suplexes?
16.
16?
Suplex City was 16.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was super rad. But after that, like, the shtick has gotten kind of old with me. Like, I'm like, okay, go back to wrestling, not just suplexing.
Well,
that's my two cents. I could be wrong.
No, I think that's sensible. But let's go ahead and introduce the panel officially. We've been riffing for a few seconds here. Today we've got John Tyler Christopher back again from
Bonjour.
Yesterday.
Thank you.
And Derek Adams with us as well.
Andy Cordy.
What's up?
Andy Cordy.
Your name is Andy?
Yeah.
Who was what? Really?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, man.
No worries.
My fault. Well, we have you guys on the stage. Yeah, that's a host fail. Sorry.
That's the problem with indie comics. Nobody even knows your name. You don't get like super huge like when you draw comics for Marvel and stuff.
So let's get into that. Like, that's actually an unintentionally hilarious way to start this. Indie comics. You do indie comics exclusively.
Yes.
The Mayor is your work.
The Manor is a comic strip about artists who live in a haunted boarding house. And I do everything for that one. I do all the art, all the writing, lettering, lay it out. It's all me.
That's got to be awesome, like, for you, right? To, like, and time consuming, obviously.
It is.
Because, I mean, obviously, in the comic book industry, you know, people are, you're a letterer, or you are the writer, or you do the cover art, or the whole art. And you kind of got to go, well, I'm doing it all myself.
I have. And that, it's actually what led me to other things like doing Cynical Stew and Empire Comics Lab, you know, working on titles for them, which has also led to my first book that's going to be coming out by First Comics. I don't know if I can talk about that one yet, but I can tell you there is something coming out.
Classified.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you.
Heck yeah. And then... you work with Marvel 10
yes.
years, as we found out yesterday.
Yes.
So at some point, were you in indie comics doing indie work, really?
I actually kind of almost skipped it in a weird way.
That's kind of what I gathered from yesterday's conversation.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's what I did. I did the whole advertising world agency stuff. Then I did the D&D and role-playing game work. And then that kind of segued into the comics. And honestly, like I even feel that it's disrespectful for me to say I'm a comic book artist because I've only done like two interior books. Like those are comic book artists. I'm just a jerk that draws a cover. Just my job is to sell those comics.
Well, you do a great job.
Well, thank you.
You do.
I mean,
I appreciate that, but I admire like what you do, right? It's like that's what I read. You know, that's why I'm into comics. I love a good cover, but it's the inside that's the product.
It's a story.
And I learned long ago that, you know, when you're young and you're like, oh, this guy's terrible or this blah, 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 like, I don't think anyone truly respects how much work and time and effort goes into just penciling a comic or inking a comic or coloring a comic. And the fact that you not only do all three of those, but you also write the comic. And again, I know I'm not doing a very good job of being like, indie comics suck, but screw it. Yeah, no, it's like, it's unbelievable the amount of time. And when you think of having to produce a page a day or what have you, like, yeah, I'm sorry the anatomy might not be perfect, but you get my props. Like, I won't talk smack about those people. And so, like I said, I think with indie comics especially, even though I never was, I guess, a part of that, like, I'm in awe constantly. There's so many diamonds in the rough and just gems out there.
And I think now is, like, the greatest time for the comic book industry in indies because The internet makes everything ultra accessible.
It does.
And it, so it allows for you to, okay, you have a brilliant story and you want to tell your story and you might have great art or you might have okay art. It doesn't need to be perfect. It's just, again, it should mostly be the story that counts, right? So you go online, you do a little bit of research. Oh, there's a company I can send my book to. They'll print it. No questions asked. However, I send it to them. Once you have it to your liking, you send it. And you couldn't do that 20 years ago.
Well, not only that, but I mean, and I'm sorry but to jump in here, but like...
Go for it.
There's not just that, but you don't even have to print your comic book anymore.
Yeah.
It can just be all digital. You can have like zero overhead other than hosting a website, you know, and...
And like, what it costs you in supplies if you work traditionally. I mean, if you work digitally, I suppose your supplies are electricity yeah, and your computer.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
But yeah, no, I think this is such a wonderful time, and I think not only from the technology of production and distribution, but also, I mean, like everyone is looking for the next cool thing, and you have readers that are out there that are hungry for it, but you also have a machine in Hollywood and all these other things that are looking for the next big, like, hey, maybe we could make a movie of that, and then we don't have to pay such and such the big licensing fees. Like, you're seeing my friend David Atchison. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's a writer, but he actually worked with Rosario Dawson on a comic book called The OCP.
I think I actually knew that one.
And like, in Rosario, like, she co-worked on the book, so it's like it is her in the starring role. And it was a great book. But it was also, like, make no bones about it, it was an indie comic designed to try and sell a pitch to make a movie.
That's which was really smart. Creative, super creative, different way to do it. So I got to ask, we've asked him,
sure.
We know yesterday, how he got into comics. Where's your journey into comics begin, man?
Comics are what taught me how to read. Like, I hated to read. I just would not do it. Only thing that my parents could get me to read was this children's book that was like it was about a robot that was like named B8 or something like that, or B2 or something like that, and I'd read that one over and over and over. I wouldn't deviate from that at all, and my dad just finally got fed up with it, and he's like, you know, the kid's got to learn how to read eventually. He's, you know, first grade and still not reading, not because couldn't read, because I do have, you know, like dyslexic tendencies and things like that.
Totally
understand. But I didn't want to. Nothing that they would set in front of me. Dick and Jane had no interest. I couldn't care about their lives. They could, you know, die in a fiery crash, and I would be like, whatever.
See Dick crash?
Yeah. I think there's a movie about that. Anyway. I was really into He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Awesome.
That totally didn't get any better there. So my dad started getting me He-Man comics. Made a world of difference. From there, it became Batman and Spider-Man and the Mirage run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Excellent.
You know, I have almost the whole Archie run as well, but like my dad got me the Mirage stuff, like the real independent stuff.
You still to this day have Mirage TMNT?
Yes.
Eastman and Laird.
Yes. In fact, I have Eastman illustrations on my wall in my office. I have Lawson's. I've got a Frank Fosco up there as well.
That's incredible.
TMNT are right here in my heart.
That's awesome, man. That's one of my favorite series as well. I feel like we said that yesterday, talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So let's just riff on that for a second. There were new movies. I don't know if you guys have seen.
I have.
You both have children. So it's got to be, it's difficult, right? You like probably had to see that movie. No, you didn't.
I did not.
You chose not to.
Thank God my girls weren't that interested in
okay.
it. So.
Okay, good.
I chose to see the movie. Like when we rented it from the library.
The first one.
The first
okay.
and the second. Okay. I have the original movies, okay? You know, but the Michael Bay remakes, my daughter at the time when I was watching it was 7 years old, and she didn't even see the whole movie. She was like, she was pointing out plot holes through the whole thing. She was like, why are they sliding on their shells through the whole movie? This is so stupid. Like, it really, the second movie was better.
It tried
not
to be.
Not a lot, but it was better.
When the look of the turtles is the one thing I can't get over,
oh,
it
my gosh.
Killed the movies for me.
9-foot turtles ain't doing it for anybody.
No, not at all. But to get back to it, so you are an indie artist and an indie comic writer.
Yes.
Where's your very first venture? When did you decide you were going to take this step? It's one thing for comic books to like teach you how to read and to fall in love with your different heroes. But when does it go from I'm reading these and enjoying them to this is an obsession, this is something I need to do? It's not just something that you think is fun, because comics are a lot of work.
Yes.
I mean, really.
They're a full-time job, obviously. John knows that. But you put in 8 hours on a page, if you're lucky. You know, for me with strips, obviously it's a little smaller and I can break it down into much more bite-sized pieces, but if I'm working on something for Empire Comics Lab, whether it be Cemetery Plots or Actionthology or, you know, one of our other titles, you know, if I'm inking or I'm doing the pencils or whatever, you know, it's still 8 hours. It's like a full-time job, and I go to a full-time job as it is, which is actually more than full-time, but that's neither here nor there, you know. Plus, I've got kids. I've got family, you know. My son was up here just a minute ago with me.
So two things I know about your life. It seems like coffee is your friend, and you don't know the word sleep.
I don't know the word sleep, and coffee's actually not my friend, but I do set back a few energy drinks.
Oh, yeah, some Red Bull probably.
No, I do a lot of V8. I used to do a lot of the Monsters, but I grow immune to them, so I have to switch out.
Oh, that's actually pretty smart. And Brandon's a big energy drink guy, or was at least at one point in time. Oh, what was it?
All right, so, like, energy drinks get expensive.
Yes.
Like, Red Bull is, like, the worst. Venoms are now, like, $1.
That's still
like,
not bad.
Like, the 16-ounce Venoms, they got, like, Black Mamba and Death Adder. They're, like, my two favorite flavors. Yeah, they're, like, $1. Like, maybe some gas stations. Ruler Foods in Frankfurt has them. Like, I'm, like, 10 for the week.
Yeah.
I take one to work every day. Energy drinks. Tangent.
Okay, so back to it. When do you decide? When does it? What was the like the kind of like the aha moment? Do you remember it?
I kind of. I was attempting to make a comic book, and a friend of mine in college, Aaron Manier, who now does the comic Black Rose. You know, he saw that, you know, he and I both had a mutual interest in comics. We weren't roommates at the time, but we had a few classes together. We lived down the hall from each other. And he was like, hey, that's cool that you're doing a comic. It kind of sucks, though. And I was like, you know, I get it. The premise isn't for everybody. He's like, yeah, no, the premise definitely isn't for everybody. But your artwork's really static. You know, like you're it looks like you have action figures standing there. And I was like, oddly enough, that's where I get most of my poses from, because I don't have somebody to, you know,
pose for you. Yeah.
I get action figures for my poses too.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
No, I do action figure covers. So
oh, I see.
It was an inside joke and no one laughed.
I totally missed it because I misunderstood. I thought you were agreeing that you also used action figures for posing.
No.
Yeah, totally missed it.
Go on.
So your friend's like, hey, man, your comic's not good. Art is not cool. The story's not bad, but your art's not cool. When you step it up, were you just like increasing the amount of times you drew a day?
Well, I mean, I was in college. I was going to school for art.
Oh, excellent.
Specifically going down the illustration path, same as him. And I could see it. You know, when he pointed it out that it looked like action figures, you know, I was like, yeah, it, you know, it's true, because I was using action figures, you know. You know, as I finally started getting some live models and things like that, understanding better about not necessarily dynamic poses, but more realistic poses. That that made a bit of a change. Aaron and I started rooming together. We started a comic strip together called Fred and Jesse. Another writer approached me about doing artwork for a strip called For Real. Those were running in the school newspaper. It had a lot of, you know, a lot of following behind it. Aaron eventually, you know, decided that Fred and Jesse was done. We both graduated. Life went on. I got married, had a kid, got laid off from my job, was incredibly, you know, like down on my luck because, you know, you're searching for a job and you got a family. What do? And my wife was like, while you're looking for a job, why don't you start this comic strip that you've been talking about and you've been writing for years, just never really doing anything with. So I took a whole bunch of the Fred and Jesse stuff. I took some of the stuff from that comic that I was drawing originally, folded it all into the same universe, and I started The Manor. The Manor eventually led me to doing Cynical Stew strips. Cynical Stew led me to doing stuff for Empire Comics Lab, and the reason that they loved me is that I could be a catch-all. Whatever they needed at the moment, I could fill in, whether it be pencils, whether it be inks, whether it be letters, you know, I'm there. I'm there for anything that they need. And I knew business because I had already been moving The Manor for years now. Something that, like, some of these guys that work for Empire Comics Lab, Roger McKenzie, just to kind of name drop, you know, okay, one or two people here. Dan Johnson writes for Dennis the Menace and things like that. There, you know, we have actually a plethora of talent that come from big names to guys who this is their first thing that they're doing. And none of them have ever run business before. They don't know how to make the money off of it. They're like, somebody always just cut me a check. And I was like, here's what you do, guys.
Yeah, you have to kind of sell yourself. It's interesting, you were talking about your story down on your luck, and then now you're like on the way up, you know? I think that's very classic superhero, because the superhero always has to fall before they can become something special. And it's good to hear that there are good people in the industry that, aren't just like, and there are people like this that I know that they're really talented artists, and they're just like, I don't really like comics, I'm not into the source material, but I can make money off of it.
Well, that's, I mean, going back to like, awesome time for comics is, it's not about like capes and tights anymore, right?
Exactly.
Or even like fantasy, like sci-fi. There's like romance comics are making a comeback and stuff.
Which is weird to me.
But it's awesome.
It is, but it's weird to me.
Like the idea that, it's such a weird time, right? Because the comic book industry, and from a like big business standpoint, the comic book industry is ruling Hollywood. It rules the video game industry. It rules action figures. It rules lunchboxes. And I'm sorry, I apologize if I mentioned this yesterday, but like it runs everything except the comic books. Like comic books are probably the least, from a spreadsheet standpoint.
Yeah.
Comic books are the least important thing in comic books.
Actually, because of doing business, you know, on an independent level, I follow everything that like Marvel and DC are doing business-wise, what Dark Horse is doing business-wise, as well as other like small-time independent guys, like guys who are at a level even lower than I am. Like, what are they doing that's causing them to rise quickly? Like, I follow the business of everybody that I possibly can. And yeah, the comics are the thing that make them the least amount of money. It's the thing that they, you know, they want, you know, the comics to obviously make them money when it comes to movies and things like that, but it's not their number one cash cow.
Well, you can see that at cons, too. I mean, one of the nice things about LaffyCon that I've experienced so far this weekend is, like, holy crap, there's a show and comic books are the star, right? Like you go to most cons and it's like about the celebrities or the cosplay, which I love. I'm excited. I love that the comic book movies are huge. The video games are huge. That the IPs have become these like juggernauts, if you will. And I love that a lot of people do complain about like, oh, cons are all about like actors. And I'm like, that's great because a lot of those people now that are coming to cons, they wouldn't have been there before if it wasn't for that guy that played a zombie in The Walking Dead for one episode. And that's awesome because it's our job in the comics, whether you're a vendor or a creator, indie, Marvel, big people, like small, to show people like this is an art form that has value. Like there's a reason why the big movies are based on this on these properties. There's a reason why everyone that played Arkham Asylum and Arkham City and everything is like, you know what the coolest thing about that is? You are Batman, and you feel like Batman. And that's not, if Batman and the comics hadn't permeated our culture as to what Batman was and who he is for people to translate him into the films and into the video games, like that's a testament to the quality of comic books and how saturated they've become in our collective conscience. You know, like, I think that it's an exciting time for comics because I see it growing in interesting and new directions. I do see indie comics making a larger splash. I think, you know, like one of the things that a lot of people have complained about Marvel recently is on like the whole like, oh, like, you know, the diversity issue of like, oh gosh.
That's been a recent train wreck.
I think it's brilliant. And here's why. Like, it ain't about us anymore. Because it's great. First of all, comic book fans, myself included, we complain. We always want what we remember, right? Like, I spent a long time yesterday talking about how much I love the 90s. Because that's my nostalgia. And I was a kid then. I think that people are going to complain no matter what.
Yep.
However, it ain't about us anymore. Like, I think Marvel's doing a good job of building the next generation so that when it comes time for, like, in 10 years, 15 years, a lot of young readers now that might be women or of different groups than just the traditional comic book fan looks back and is like, man, I love Miss Marvel. Kamala is where it's at. Or, like, you know, I never got more hate mail in my life than when I did a cover involving Riri Williams. But, like, I could see Riri in the future having people looking fondly on her, not us, but younger kids. Yes. It will become their nostalgia. And is there more that we, and by we I mean not only us as creators, but also the industry and the big publishers and the small publishers and the indie publishers, there's a lot more we could be doing to convince people like, did you like the Avengers? Because if you like the Avengers movie, congratulations, you like comics. You might not know it. You might not have ever read it, but you like comics. Or like, did you guys read Vader, the new Vader comic?
We reviewed Darth Maul.
Maul's cool. Vader, including Vader down, is epic. Like, it is, you will read it and just be like, oh my God, Darth Vader is a badass. Like, in 25 issues, it's a lot more than what you saw in, you know, what, 8 hours of movie time that he's ever been on screen. So there's a call to get people in there and expose them to these things, but it's just so important that we have to grow the industry. Mm-hmm. It can't be 40-year-old guys who have read comics their whole life. We need to bring in new readers. And I applaud Marvel and anything people do to try and broaden the scope. Now, again, like, let's see what happens and what we'll go, see where it goes with everything. But, I mean, I give them props for having the cojones to be like, yeah, you know what? Falcon's the new Captain America. Let's see where this goes. Because, I mean, this might be shocking. Steve Rogers could always come back. Just like... Nightcrawler came back from Bucky came back. You know, like, it's flipping comic books, man. It's like it's worse than a soap opera as far as when people die.
Only one who stays dead is Uncle Ben.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for him to be a Herald of Galactus, so.
Actually, that's kind of untrue, because during Spider-Verse, they actually brought a version of Uncle Ben back who was Spider-Man on his Earth. Parker had died. Peter died. And Uncle Ben was in the suit, and he was kind of like, out of shape and a little away, so it was like, it was pretty funny, you know, it was one of those things.
I'm having trouble visualizing that. Thomas Wayne is okay, but Uncle Ben to me is like,
He's the moral.
Yeah. No, I get it. I find it. People don't give things. We live in a very instant gratification culture, right? Like, like the moment that Captain America said "Hail Hydra," the internet lost its mind, and I was like, "Let's see where this goes." And like, what was Marvel supposed to say? They're like, "It's not mind control." Well, yeah, they're supposed to give you away the plot like that afternoon when everyone's sending in death threats and losing their mind over it, like. Let's see where things roll and let's see where things go. And going to indie comics, like that's one of the things I think that's really cool is that like Marvel does have their hands tied because there is that immediate like, oh, the sky is falling, Chicken Little. But you guys are able to push the boundaries and see where you can do cool things that then you'll almost start to notice, almost like how comic books and Marvel comics affect the Marvel movies. Indie comics set precedents that other companies are able to follow narratively and things like that.
Well, and there's been things that a lot of indie comics are able to do that mainstream comics have a much harder time doing. You know, you want to tell that story that's a bit more slice of life. Find me one Batman reader that's going to be like, oh yeah, I want a slice of life Batman story. Ain't going to happen. You know, you want, but that all that stuff would still be happening to Bruce Wayne, you know, or Dick Grayson, or whoever happens to be in the bat suit at the moment. One of the things that I thought was a major change for DC that I personally liked, maybe it's because I am a parent, was when they gave Bruce Wayne a son. You know, you can see that, you know, in fact, I got a couple indie books on my shelf that are superhero books where, you know, it's a parent who's a superhero and they've got to deal with, you know, their kids. You can't treat your kid, you know, who's acting up the same way that you would a villain who is acting up. A villain who's acting up, you can slap him around a little bit, you know, knock him back in line. You can't do that with a villain, you know. When it's Batman and Robin, and Robin's your son, you know, you can't treat him like any previous Robin, you know. And that's one of the things, you know. You want a black superhero that is essentially Superman or Luke Cage. I would totally recommend the book The Samaritan by Victor Dandridge. Awesome, completely awesome. I mean, it's very much along the lines of Luke Cage or you know, honestly, Superman if he just wore street clothes and was black, you know. You want something that is like Invincible or like Spider-Man, but you want a minority instead. You know what? Hot Shot by Michael Watson. Great book, you know. Totally promote that one because it is amazing. You know, like I can go through a list of superhero, non-superhero, horror, adventure, whatever, you know, in indie stuff that is doing a lot of the things that Marvel and DC are and even Dark Horse are trying to do and having a hard time being able to do it because they've already got this establishment, and unfortunately that establishment is almost what's holding them back because as humans we hate change, but at the same time we're still craving that constant change. We want those new stories.
It's funny that you bring up change because I was going to say with the different diversity line that Marvel recently did, while that's big, shocking, oh my gosh news now, the hope is in 10 years, 15 years, that's just the norm.
Right.
There's all kinds of... It should not matter who you are as a person. You should be able to be a superhero.
Right.
I think that's a beautiful thing to tie it back to cons. Because if you're doing cosplay and stuff, you can be a superhero, even if maybe in real life you don't feel like one.
Well, you're seeing that now, right? Like, it's... Comic books have always been not only a medium and a narrative and a culture of acceptance. I mean, I was just talking to somebody yesterday, like, it's amazing to think, but that famous cover of Captain America number one where he's punching Hitler, Marvel received death threats over that, because how dare this new hero attack that nice Hitler man over in Germany, because we have no problem with Nazis at the time. But Marvel, who was a company that had a lot of Jewish people that worked in it and blah, 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 had a problem with Hitler, obviously. It took America and our culture time to acclimate to what comics were. Comics were always the first mediums to introduce, you know, that touched on certain taboos that the rest of our culture and cinema and other things weren't ready to touch on. That is such that's what makes it a powerful medium, and is, I think, makes it something where comics are inclusive, not exclusive. And I think we are our own worst enemy sometimes when it comes to saying we don't like that. You know, your point of we always want it to be the same. It's like, there's only so many times I can see Spider-Man do this certain thing. Like, it's nice. Let's see where these stories go, because we can always push the proverbial reset button. But, I mean, like, look at Miles Morales. Like, you know what? Sometimes you have to throw 100 things at the table, at the wall. One of them might stick. And I think, like, Miles is a great example. Kamala is a great example of, like, these are amazing characters that empower and strengthen not only the Marvel universe, but also a great introduction to a whole new set of fans. You know, I love the idea that, like, there's going to be a lot of little kids running around probably in the next couple of summers, regardless of the color of their skin, being like, no, I'm T'Challa. I'm the Black Panther. You know, like, because by planting these seeds now, we're setting up the generations to come, that it's not about the color of your skin. It's not about... I want little boys to be like, no, I'm Carol Danvers, the new Captain Marvel, because she can kick the crap out of the Hulk even, you know? Like, just like, I don't mind, and I just got done saying how about, like, Rey yesterday of my children being able to associate with Star Wars, like, that was a gateway in for them. And as that grows, those walls will start, I feel, will start to be torn down, that it's not, because guess what? It's like, I don't have blonde hair, but I can still pretend I'm Steve Rogers. Well, eventually it's going to be, yeah, I'm not this gender or this race or this ethnicity, but I can still identify with those characters. And the larger that pool becomes, the more readers we bring into comics, which, again, we want comics to succeed, because we can't have cool new movies or cool new video games if there's no comics to base them off of. We can't have comic conventions that these actors and these people play in if it's not for the comic book artists and writers and the indie people that are developing this new stuff for Marvel to go out and hire to tell these amazing stories. So it's like, you kind of have to start at the base level, right? And I think it's sad sometimes that gets overlooked. I can respect that, but that's on us. That's nobody else's fault, but ours, how to promote that and how to, like, engage those people. So there's my preaching.
You know, The Walking Dead is something that brought me and him together. Awesome. I fell out of comic books for a long time. And got heavy into video games, mm-hmm. you know, and that's my vice. But when I started, like, I saw The Walking Dead show first. I'm like, oh, this is a comic book? Okay, cool. And that brought me into it. And then I sat there for like 3 days and read all of them.
Awesome.
And then, but one thing that I love how they weave the stories in with the characters. You're reading it, and all of a sudden you realize that, you know, Paul Monroe, Jesus, is gay. But they don't highlight it. It comes out with he's just talking to a guy,
mm-hmm.
and then you as a reader go, wow, they're not treating this like it's abnormal,
right?
They're treating this as this is just a living, breathing person,
right?
Who is having a moment with another living, breathing person, and they're not like waving a big flag saying this look at us, this is what we're doing, but it's just they're treating it like it's everyday life, as a means of like pushing our society and saying this is the way it should be.
Right.
This is just, as people, we should just be people. And
that was one of my favorite things with Generation X, right? Yes. Like, there was this, it was a point they made. Well, they didn't make it a point, but it was on a subtext level. Sync. The whole concept behind that was, like, he's just a character. He happens to be black. He was one of the first African-American characters that didn't speak in, like, slang during an era when everything was so, like, hyper-stereotyped. And so, like, everything had to be, like, you couldn't just be, like, I'm gay. It's, I'm super gay. You know, like, everything was, like, so over the top. And comics, again,
yeah,
they're leading the way to test and train people that when they see that in a movie, it's just like, oh, that guy's gay. That's cool.
See, like, and like in terms of way characters talk, we did a live or like we did a booked review of Secret Wars, of the original Secret Wars. We sat there and we read all the issues, and it was almost kind of like a book club of the month. Nice. We sat there and we went through, and then and honestly, it was the first time that I'd actually read the full thing.
Okay.
And so I didn't have any lead up towards it. You know, we just had like the trade paperback book. And sitting there reading it, and then you realize Iron Man's talking funny, and because it's not Tony Stark,
right?
You know, and then what did he say? Like,
he said something like, "It's not like playing round ball, Junior." And it was just like, that's not something Tony Stark would say. But who's saying that? And then it hit me. I was like, at this time, Rhodey's being Iron Man, and then I was like, wow, that's how they were writing Rhodey,
right?
You know,
so it's. I enjoy comics. I enjoy what comics has done. I feel that there's a barometer for what comics do socially, and 9 times out of 10, I agree with it. Not all the time. Like, I don't want to become that guy and like get like pigeonholed into like, but there are certain things that I think comics, they're always trying to, it's virtuous. Like, that's the goal, right? Like, they're superheroes, and not to get away from the non-superhero stuff, but like, they're trying to do right with everything they do, and I think that's very admirable.
They can break barriers a little bit easier, and not necessarily because of the medium of being written, but or illustrated, but because they can break a barrier easier because you have time to learn about these characters, because a comic only comes out once a month, or if it's in a strip like mine, it only comes out once a day or every other day or, you know, 3 times a week or something like that. It's got a regular schedule, but it's still coming out slower than, let's say, a TV show, or it's coming out slower than real life. You know, and that makes a difference, you know, because it's not moving at the speed of life. You can take things a little bit easier. You know, you get introduced to the character, and as long as it is not right off of the bat, all of a sudden, hey, here is, a black Batman, who speaks street jargon, but is, rich as can be. How does the character like that even come about? You have no introduction to him. That would be one of those characters where people are like, don't want to read that one because it's completely unrealistic. But if you have time to, see how the character is being developed, you have the time for the character to start coming in, then, maybe you could see that he actually learned to fight on the streets. Maybe you could see that he, was not always rich and just ended up having somebody who financially backs him rather than, oh, well, my parents died and now I'm rich, Or maybe it's something where he just really works his butt off. He works his butt off. He gains his money. He doesn't spend it frugally, he saves it up, and now he's rich, and he's turning that into fighting crime or something like that. You have that character that you can build up and develop and follow, and you can start to take an interest, and you would be like, yeah, a black Batman who's rich and speaks street jargon makes sense now. But when you just come out the gate with that, it's too hard for people to accept or understand.
It is a very tough sell.
No, and also, since you said, The Walking Dead brought you guys together, I got to tell you, check out Dead World by Gary Reed. It was totally Walking Dead before Walking Dead. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's, just like Walking Dead, it's about the human condition more so than the zombies.
My question to you guys both is, will you guys ever collaborate? Like, I think you guys work well together. You guys talk well together. you're an artist. You can tell great stories. You do great art. I just, it's like a, you know, I don't know.
I'd be down. I mean, I'd be down. It's just, you know, scheduling is always a nightmare. It's almost like, I know you're one of the few people I can be like, when you say I've been working too much lately, I can be like, yeah, you have. I can tell.
Yeah.
And see it in your eyes. We can smell our own.
Yeah. It's, I think that, you know, despite the fact that we live here so close to each other, we would have an easier time getting our kids together to play together yeah. than we would to actually, you know, get a have enough time to collaborate on a project. But it is someday, it is in my plans that I'm going to have John do something for me for the Manor or for Empire Comics Lab, you know, but that someday will have to come when I'm a little less busy and he's a little less busy or I've got somebody else to start taking over some duties for me.
Excellent.
Totally.
Well, do we want to open it up for any questions, see if they have anything for you guys about indie comics? Anybody want to start their own indie comic as the con's kind of starting to wind down here, it seems? Anybody?
And it is okay if you say, hey, you know what? I've read The Manor and it sucks. I'm fine with that because it's not for everybody.
Well, I'm going to go check it out when we're done here. But Brandon, did you have any questions for the guys before we jump out of here? Yeah, it was a really good conversation. Guys, we got to talk to Andy, right? Andy,
yep.
I didn't screw it up this time. And John Tyler. You guys were great. Thank you guys so much. Hopefully we'll see you guys next year at LaFeeCon, right?
You betcha.
Awesome, no doubt, man.
Awesome.
Take care. Right. Thank you so much.
And that wraps up another set of panels for us here at Journey into Comics. That was awesome. A lot of great conversation to be had with both of those guys. LaFeeCon has been nothing but hospitality towards us. It was a great event. You know, we've actually mentioned on the podcast before, we did another con, and we did that, and the show was good, but then the whole other thing kind of just came together maybe a little bit not like we wanted. And while we weren't involved with all the drama that happened with that other one, we did hear about it, and it did kind of affect us a little bit. But this had none of that.
This was one of those weird con. Well, I guess it's not really a weird con. It's like it was a weird to me for such a great experience because, like you said, it was all about hospitality. They were very, you know, accommodating. If we needed something, they were going to make it happen. They were, you know, hey, I have a list of people that are coming with us because Journey into Comics is not one podcast. We're like seven podcasts within this one podcast. So that entails a lot of other people. And they were really cool about that. And they didn't give us grief for the most part. They were a little, again, gaffes, but it happens. Nothing is going to run perfect. But as close to perfect as possible was this con. And it was great, man. I don't know. Do you think we should say the good news we got at the end of the con? Since is this our last panel show, or are we doing one more? I don't know how we're doing it because I'm not sure what all the footage we have from these.
Yeah, Nate, I don't know exactly how we're going to be doing and putting this together just yet. I mean, this might be the first one that gets out. I don't know. But no, we did talk to John Tyler Christopher and Andy Cordy separately. And we're going to try and have these guys on the show just as a sitting back and relaxing and, you know, eating some pizza and just nerding out. And, so hopefully that does happen for us here in the near future. We're going to get a hold of them and get them on the show. Until then, though, I think this is going to wrap us up for another episode of Journey into Comics. You can find us on all of our, you know, social media, Journey into Comics Podcast on Facebook, JSC Podcast on Twitter, Journey into Comics at Instagram. And you're looking at us, you can look at us up on the Podbean at journeyintocomics.podbean.com and check out all of our old stuff, as well as YouTube, where you can find the video for this episode as well. So with that being said, I'm Brando.
And I'm Nate. And thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Journey into Comics. Later.